Good morning and welcome to Spotlight 92. I'm your host, Malvin Massey. And of course, every Thursday we talk to the movers and shakers of the world, the people that are making things happen for your benefit and mine. And our guest today has been a guest before, and how appropriate that we get a chance to talk to him again. He is the co-founder of the... let me get it all straight here. So I've been talking with a grief recovery. I'm getting it. Russell, grief recovery. Well, we did an interview before about the grief recovery handbook, which has been reprinted and redone. He is also co-founder of Grief Recovery Institute, I do believe it is. Anyway, he's on the phone with us right now. He's got a new book out. It's called Moving Beyond Loss, The Real Answers to Real Questions from Real People, by Russell Friedman and John W. James, creators of the Grief Recovery Method. And our guest is Russell Friedman. Good morning, Russell.
Good morning, Malvin. Nice to hear your voice again.
Yeah, good to hear from you, too. And how appropriate that we get a chance to talk again on the eve or in the aftermath of what happened in Newtown, Connecticut just not too very long ago.
Yes, and it was a fascinating day for me. I mean, it got very personal in an odd way. I had been at an agility trial with my dog and didn't know anything about it. I'm here in California, and as I'm driving back, my wife calls me and tells me what's going on, the mayhem. So after I got off the line with her, I was on the radio listening to the tragedy unfold that had already unfolded. And then I got back to my home base in L.A., and when I got here, I had an email. My best friend of 42 years had died suddenly that day. And me, oddly enough, that death kind of trumped the others, as you imagine would, not to negate them or minimize those things, but it threw me into a turmoil, obviously a personal turmoil, on top of the fact that I knew when I heard the news that I would be called on to be addressing the topic in Newtown because over the years, and I've been on CNN after 9/11, I was on CNN after the lady drowned all her children in Houston, and I tend to be someone that, an expert that people go to, and not to be arrogant, but people go to for help in these situations. And I realized that I had to deal first and foremost with my personal grief to some degree to be able to address the nation and talk. Yeah, I had, the following week, I had about 22 radio interviews around the country, all of whom wanted to speak about it. So I had to make sure that I addressed my personal grief first so that I could address the national and local grief. And I think in what I'm saying, Malvin, is kind of an explanation to people, and especially those people who are have young children who may be concerned about going to school in the aftermath of that. That, and notice I said I have to address my grief first before I can help others, and that would be a very, very poignant note to parents. You must directly, straightforwardly deal with your own grief, or you can't help your children effectively. They won't follow you, or you will scare them because your verbal and nonverbal behavior will be mismatched. So it's really important to be straightforward and honest, and also deal with your things. You've got to go through them. You can't go around them or under them or behind them. You've got to go straight through, no matter how difficult or painful it may seem.
You know, and what happened at Sandy Hook Elementary School, it's one of those national mourning situations. But every day now, which is that incident has stirred up the argument about gun rights again and having assault rifles on the street. But on top of that, people are constantly dealing with grief from murder and death within the cities, within their personal lives. And I know before... Oh, it hasn't been that long ago when grief was not even a topic of conversation as far as study and research and actually dealing with it. Now, every time
you're absolutely right. You know, let me just jump in there and then you come back in. When I joined John here at the Institute 26 years ago, what we used to say all the time was that grief was the most off-limits topic for conversation in the English-speaking Western world. And now... You know, in an odd virtue in the face of these tragedies, we are learning that we must speak, we must speak up, we must talk better, we must learn how to communicate on this topic because, let's face it, grief is probably the only universal topic now. Mm. Everyone will be affected by grief. By the time a child in our society is 4 years old, he or she has already had many losses of various kinds, whether it's death of a pet, death of a grandparent, moving, all kinds of losses. And yet we've had our head in the sands for many years, and it's time, sadly, we got to get our head out and get better information because the subject of grief is not going to go away. We just need to learn better how to deal with it.
Well, and you mentioned something just now, too, as you were talking, that grief, people grieve about a lot of different things. We already know about death. That's one thing that people grieve about the most, but people grieve about a ton of things that aren't even mentioned in a lot of situations.
You bet. In fact, you know, we have written 4 books. Our first book, the one you alluded to, our most famous, has sold over 500,000 copies. It's called The Grief Recovery Handbook. And the subtitle is The Action Program for Moving Beyond Death, Divorce, and other losses, including loss of health, loss of career, and loss of faith, which is a huge issue. And the career or money stuff became massive in this last few years with all the economic impact and people's 401ks being affected. And that's all grief as well. Now, our second book called When Children Grieve, and listen to this subtitle, for adults to help children deal with death, divorce, pet loss, moving, and other losses. One of the biggest hidden losses in our lives is moving. And here's our definition of grief. Grief is the conflicting feelings caused by a change or an end in a familiar pattern of behavior. And even though you may move from a smaller house to a bigger house and from a weak and poor neighborhood to a better neighborhood, everything familiar changes, and what the human condition likes least is change. We don't deal that well with change. We need time and other skills to adapt to the change. And so if we're afraid of grief in terms of change, then we don't deal effectively with it, and it bowls us over, and all of a sudden we find ourselves kind of living in the past because we haven't been able to adapt to and live in the present. So the tentacles, if you will, of grief are far-reaching. They go all throughout everything we do. And grief, you know, since time can't heal an emotional wound any more than time could fix a flat tire, we need to learn better ways to deal with grief. And that's really what all our books are all about. How do we deal with this normal and natural phenomenon called grief?
When you say that, that's one of the statements that we always hear. Just give it time. It'll get over it. Time heals all wounds and things. When somebody says that to you, what do you tell them?
Well, when I do big lectures in front of large halls, 1,000 people or 500 people, what I'll do is I'll ask them, I'll say, okay, everybody, close your eyes. You're going to be my little PowerPoint display, I tell them, and I want you to close your eyes and imagine you leave this hotel or this building and you go out to the parking lot. And as you approach your car, you gasp because you see that it has a flat tire. Now, here's my question. Would you pull up a chair and sit down and wait for air to jump back in that tire? And everyone laughs. It's a spontaneous laugh because the image is funny, sitting there waiting for air to jump back in your tire. Mm-hmm. Then I say, of course not. You know that you have to take an action. One of the two actions, probable ones, is you root around in the trunk and you look for the spare tire in the jack and you jack it up and you change it and then you get back on the road. Or, if you're like most of us, you realize, aha, this is why cell phones exist. And you call the auto club and say, hey, can you come down here and change my tire? I got to get the kids to school. But an action will be taken, whether it's by you or by the auto club or someone else. Now, here's the metaphor. A broken heart, an emotionally broken heart, is remarkably like a flat tire, isn't it? The get up and go is got up and went. The ability to participate fully in life is limited. And without action, nothing changes. In fact, I'm going to tell you, Melvin, something so powerfully sad, and I hope people listening get the sense of what I'm about to say. I have personally talked to over 100,000 grieving people over the last 26 years that I've been doing this. That's a lot of people. I'm talking one-on-one on the telephone or in person, okay? I'm not talking in large audiences or on the radio or TV. That's a lot of folks. And I'm going to tell you, at a certain point in the conversation, I'm liable to say to them, gosh, I guess you realize by now they lied to us that time doesn't heal your broken heart. And do you know what 99.9% of them have said back to me when I said that? They say, yeah, and it seems like it's getting worse because the flat tire can't get better. The flat heart doesn't get better without actions to change, to improve, to complete what's unfinished, to allow you. You know, people want to let go and move on. Let go of what and move on where? Yeah. I mean, all these cliches about grief don't help people. They need practical, applicable ideas to help them move forward in their life because they are literally paralyzed. Grieving people become emotionally paralyzed. They're terrified. And then after a few months of grieving and feeling bad, people around them start saying really horrible stuff like, well, you should be over it by now, implying that time would have fixed it. But again, time is like that flat tire. It can't fix it. It can't fix your heart. You have to learn actions. And if you'll notice, if you think back when I said the subtitle of the Grief Recovery Handbook, the action program for moving beyond death, divorce, and other losses, it is the actions that help our heart, not just feeling, not just sitting with pain. You know, they say everyone grieves in their own way and at their own pace, and there is a certain truth to that. It's kind of nice poetry, but it doesn't say anything about recovery, and I am not in the grief arena. We are in the arena of helping people deal with their broken heart, which is the recovery part of the deal. Everyone grieves perfectly. They don't need our help. They don't need our guidance. Where they need help and guidance is, how do I complete the pain caused by this loss, no matter how outrageous it is or how natural it is? Even if your grandma is 95 and dies gently in her sleep, you can still be heartbroken because you love her and you miss her. Right. And whether or the shooting tragedy in Newtown, a tragedy, but still our hearts are broken because people who are important to us who have died, and for the rest of us with Newtown, our trust in society is diminished again. You know, where we lived, you know, until 9/11, Melbourne, I think we kind of lived in Disneyland. We'd never had a war on our shores. You know, we grew up in this kind of almost utopia. And then 9/11 was a tragic reminder how things aren't perfect there, and that you can, in a heartbeat, be gone. And it needs to remind us how to live better, not only deal with grief better.
And it had been a long time since a major tragedy that would have affected everyone. Because it seems like the 9/11, the immediate effect was that everyone was grieved and upset. And after a while, it seems like it got out of the press and nobody cared.
Yes, and then people went back to normal. You know what I remember, Mel? That's an interesting point. I remember, in fact, just this week, I was in the same restaurant where I saw this happening. In the few days after, a few weeks after 9/11, people were polite. I remember being in a parking lot of a restaurant where people normally honk and they're racing to steal a spot and they're, you know, yelling at each other and all like that. And in the few weeks after 9/11, I saw better behavior. I saw, and I wrote an article calling "People Are Behaving Better in the Parking Lot of Life," because I was affected by how 9/11 had made us be more real, more human, more aware that any moment we could be gone and we shouldn't behave badly. And then I noticed, sadly, over time, not very much time, people went back to their old honking behaviors and went back to, you know, forgetting what's most important when it all boils down is our relationships with other people. And we lost sight of that. And I think there are no virtues from Sandy Hook, but if there's anything we can learn from this, a reminder one more time of how to behave towards each other, to be as emotionally complete with each other as we can at any moment, because we never know. And the fact is, we just never know. You don't know. I don't know if we're going to draw another breath after this one. I'm in earthquake country. You're in tornado country. Any moment could be our last. So we got to make sure they count and make sure we have communicated the things that are important to us, to the people who mean something to us, because we never know when it could be over.
Yeah, you know, if you just tuned in, by the way, this is Spotlight 92. We're talking to author and executive director of Grief Recovery Institute, Mr. Russell Friedman, who, along with John W. James, has written another book on grief recovery. It's called Real Answers to Real Questions from Real People, Moving Beyond Loss. It's the name of the book. And it's available right now, as a matter of fact. You know, as you were talking then, I was thinking about religion. A religious person, which I consider myself to be religious, a religious person will say, give it to God, pray, and prayer will heal, prayer heals all wounds. Is prayer a good way to help in grief recovery?
It could be to a certain degree, but listen to this. And this is something we spend a lot of time, because it's a huge part of what we do, Melvin, as you might imagine. I train a lot of pastors, ministers, rabbis, priests. That's a part of what we do and train them in grief recovery. One of the things that is possible and very liable to happen when there's been an outrageous death, like the murders at Sandy Hook, like suicides, like drive-by shootings, and so on and so forth, is for the surviving people to have a serious, either long-term or even short-term, breach of faith in God. Because to our human minds, those things don't make sense. For example, I ask you, how can you make any sense, any spiritual, religious, God-like sense out of Sandy Hook? And the truth is, you can't. As a human, you can't. You know, maybe you could mangle words around and make something out of it. I can't, you know, and I know for a lot of grieving people that an event like that will breach their trust or faith in God, at which point prayer doesn't work for them. So when I teach the clergy and I say that, they go, oh, yeah, because guess what, Melvin? The clergy, more than anyone, sees that look on the face of their parishioners when they're trying to pray with them when that person is in a breach of faith. And then the prayer backfires. It actually isolates the griever rather than drawing them to God. And so I say to them, I say to the pastors, and I don't know if your listeners will be our congregation for the moment, but I refer to Luke 15, which has the famous phrase in the question, if you had 100 sheep and one of them was lost, would you not leave one of them out in the open while you go and find the missing one? And the answer is yes in the parable in Luke 15. And so what we say is this, if one of our flock is lost, we're all lost. So we don't open our grief recovery method programs, even in churches, with prayer in the event that one person there, of all the people in the room, might have a breach of faith in God. We don't want to push them away from the solution. The problem is this. When your heart is broken, I want you to get this image, and everyone listening, when your heart is broken, your head doesn't work right, it's hard to make decisions or concentrate or focus, but here's something equally important. When your heart is broken, your spirit cannot soar, which means the religious or spiritual aspect of you may be damaged by the loss event, which makes sense. You're a human being. Your child has been run over by a drunk driver. Your faith in the Lord could be tampered with in that moment. That's only a fair conclusion. It's not an unfair. And when I teach that to the clergy, they go, oh my gosh, thank you. Now I understand why they don't listen to me when I say, let us pray, when they're having trouble with the Lord. And remember, most preachers, and I'm sure you know this, you know, being, you know, faithful yourself, most preachers have had their own struggles with the Lord in their time when they're in seminary and their arguments, you know, just like anyone else, debating God and everything, because that's part of what teaches them how to minister to us. So this is an important thing. They love coming to our trainings because it teaches them to go for the heart first, and then we'll deal with the spiritual things. Always the heart first, because it is the singular most damaged part of the human being when their child dies or when their spouse dies or when their parent dies or when their friend dies or when they get a divorce. It is the broken heart that needs to be addressed. Mm-hmm. And then we get to spirit and mental things later.
Well, now,
does that
heart,
make some sense?
Yeah, but what I'm thinking, that the broken heart, isn't that a manifestation of the mind? Isn't that, you know, how people have psychosomatic problems? I had an aunt who used to be sick.
Betcham, Red Rider, you are absolutely right. But what you got to do, it's kind of like shopping for milk in the hardware store. You have to find the right tool for the right job at the right time. And the key here is, which tool do we need to help the griever out of this hole they're in? I mean, the hole is immense. It's a massive thing. And again, the key here is they don't have correct information for how to deal with their broken heart. If they did, or when they do, that's less of a problem. Not, it doesn't eliminate the problem. So let's talk a little bit, if we can, about this new book called Moving Beyond Laws, which is the byproduct of a really interesting thing. We're involved with a memorial website called tributes.com, spelled just the way it sounds, www.tributes.com. And a couple years ago, they came to us and asked us to provide content to help grieving people. Remember, this is a site that people go to within days or weeks of the death of someone meaningful to them. And so we started putting up articles explaining how to deal with grief, and then we put in a feature called Ask the Experts. And so we were getting, and still are, I get up to 20 questions a week from grieving people who are raw grievers in the trenches, Melvin, who can hardly breathe with their grief. And they've gone to various people for help, therapists and clergy and friends, and have not found the help they need. And in desperation, they write to me. Okay. And I send them back a personal answer. I spend a bunch of time and energy and actually answer their specific questions. And the reason the subtitle of that is Real Answers to Real Questions from Real People is because that's exactly what it is. So I spend this time and energy helping guide them to the fact that recovery is possible, moving them away from the mythological things like time heals all wounds and you shouldn't feel bad. And watch this one. Here's one of those famous ones. Don't feel bad. God won't give you more than you can handle, which is often said to people who are drowning emotionally, because, you know, and then that makes them angry at God because they don't understand that. So this book is divided into six sections based on the six major myths that we have identified that limit grieving people. And the six myths are: don't feel bad, even if something sad happens, which is insane. Replace the loss. In other words, if your dog dies, go get another dog. If your wife dies, go get another wife, which is just insane, because we can't replace relationships. We have to complete them and then go get new ones if we choose, but we just don't go get a new wife or a new dog or a new mother. You can't do that. Then there's the famous grieve alone. Grieving people tend to isolate because they're taught to. For example, when you and I are kids, we learn laugh and the whole world laughs with you, cry and you cry alone. Well, that teaches us to isolate our feelings. Then there's you got to be strong or be strong for others. And I sit here today after 26 years doing this, not knowing what in the heck it might mean to be strong for someone else. Does that mean if I lift weights, will you get muscles? If I take an aspirin, will your headache go away? And not to be silly here, but these things are absurd. And here's the choice. When it comes to be strong, here's our suggestion. You can be strong or you can be human. Pick one. Because when you try to hide and not be human and be strong, you give a demonstrate, especially if you're trying to help your children. When you act strong instead of human, you confuse your kids because they can't understand why you're telling them it's okay for them to be sad, but you're acting like nothing's wrong. Very confusing for children. And the sixth myth of the ones we identify in all our books is keep busy. And people are taught they have to keep busy after grief. And all that does
throw yourself
is distract
into your work,
Yeah, exactly. And all that does, Melvin, is it distracts them, and it creates the illusion that if I just stay busy, another day will go by and time will have healed me. And yet time compounds emotional wounds. It doesn't fix them. So the trap, and so this book, this new book, Moving Beyond Loss, is an excellent kind of stepping way or stepping stone to recovery. It doesn't force people to do recovery work. It has them read these things and see our answers. And it does two things. It helps you about you if you are struggling with any grief, but also helps you if you're around some, if you have a parent or a sibling or a child or a friend who's struggling. It gives you an awareness that you won't have had before, and it will make sense. You go, oh my gosh, I hadn't thought of it that way before. And so we have all this book, which is easy to read. It's in very human terms, just like you and I are talking. It's just a chat. I tend to write like a chat, which makes it not academic sounding. It's easy to read. It's human. And it's very real. And it's really real people who are just devastated. I, in fact, just yesterday, I'd been in the office spending a few hours getting caught up answering some questions. And I wrote a woman who was really struggling since her son and his girlfriend had died. I believe they were killed in an accident. And she'd been struggling for a year. And I wrote her, I spent a lot of time writing her answer, and I got the sweetest thank you note from her today. And she said, thank you. I didn't even know recovery was possible. I'm going to do as you said. We suggest people go to the library or bookstore and get a copy of the Grief Recovery Handbook or our other books and do the work to help them get complete rather than just sitting in pain forever. And I got this really sweet thank you note this morning. And, you know, I know you're sometimes when we do the kinds of things you and I do in helping people and talking to people and guiding people, sometimes it may feel a little thankless as if we're just working and working. But I get this constant reward from people, the feedback from people saying how much my words, and I'm like the first person to talk to them in a way that they go, oh, wow, someone cares. Yeah. You know, because everyone seems to turn away from grievers at their most crucial time, and we turn towards them. So this book, Moving Beyond Loss, is really helpful. I really encourage your listeners to go out and get a copy of it, share it with their friends and family. It will help them personally, and it will help them be aware of where others are and maybe guide them towards recovery.
Yeah, and we've got we're having quite a few people who have problems like that, grief of loss, grieving with the loss of close relationships, close relatives, rather, and such a thing right now with the crime that we have going on here in our city. There's another thing as we are winding down here, that there's another situation I just read or saw on the internet that the number of military suicides, deaths over in Afghanistan has surpassed the number of those actually killed in combat. Suicides by these guys over here in these desperate situations, dangerous situations. Is some of that possibly caused by grief, do you think? I know I read that John James was a Vietnam vet, a combat Vietnam vet, as a matter of fact.
You bet he is. And by the way, the number, I believe the number from Vietnam of suicides of Vietnam vets is treble, three times the number of people killed in combat. And this, of course, is many years on, but it's the same issue happening again. Yeah, it's a number that is outrageous. It's terrifying to think of. We have done our best to some whatever degree we've been allowed to help the military deal with this. The problem of what the veterans bring back with them, what they see, by the way, in the medical and the EMT professions, you know, emergency professions, see a lot of that same high suicide rate because they're seeing the underbelly of life. They're seeing things that you and I don't see on a daily basis as citizens. They're seeing death. They're seeing mangles and all kinds of horror. And unfortunately, whether male or female, there's a tendency to be macho or macha to try to not feel what they see. And the truth is they need to debrief those things in a more effective way. They need to have some gaps so they're not, the constant exposure can just destroy their guts. It you know what it does? It eats a piece of their soul. Every one of those events, and they need a better way, you know, to deal with the grief of what they see. And it's really hard in a community that's trying so hard to be quote-unquote, I don't know if masculine is the right word, trying not to show feelings, they're covering up, they're going the exact wrong way. And we do everything in our power to help teach them how not to do that. And we, you know, you run into all the kind of bureaucratic stuff where the powers that be don't always understand it because they're not the ones on the front lines. They're not the ones with their hearts and bellies right in the line of fire. So it's something we're working on as fast as we can. It's a huge problem. As you say, my partner's a Vietnam combat vet. He was there. He knows what that's. I only know from the outside. I don't pretend to know from the inside. Yeah. But it's a very real problem, and I want to thank you for bringing it up. It's something that needs to be acknowledged and dealt with as well as we can.
And there's a lot of grief involved in those feelings that these people have from watching their friends get blown apart and all this kind of thing, I believe.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's almost beyond our capacity and language to explain it. I've talked to my partner, you know, many times about the fact that the vets who were there, who saw it, have a hard time talking with anyone who wasn't there because no matter how we try to understand, we really don't get it.
Most combat vets. I was about to say, most combat vets will not talk about their experiences.
Yeah, exactly right. And that is true. And I recognize that. And I don't ever try to breach that line because I know it's not effective. I know when I have talked to vets, when I don't cross that line, I know they appreciate it because they've seen everybody try to be, you know, to be understanding and they don't get it. So, I encourage people to go to our website, www.griefrecoverymethod.com. And on there, there's a whole host of articles we've written over the years that can be downloaded for free and printed and shared with others. It's all the same idea we're talking about here today, making the topic of grief more open and accessible, especially to children, especially now with all this, the Sandy Hook thing having brought our consciousness back up again. Yeah. To a level that says we need to really be paying attention to how we're communicating with our children. One of my concerns, real quickly, Melvin, is that, a lot of the parents were telling their elementary school age children around the country, oh, don't be scared, it won't happen here. And I'm going, how could you possibly make that guarantee? It couldn't happen there either, and it did. And so I never want parents to promise children things they can't deliver. I urge much more correct language. We will do everything in our power to make sure nothing bad happens. We'll be very careful. You know, and you can use it as a lesson. You know how kids have to have their buddy systems when they walk across the street and when they go swimming and all that. Well, we use the same idea of being learning survival skills in a most benign sense for children to follow and reduce their fear by having them more aware rather than telling them nothing bad's going to happen, which is a promise we can't make. And I realize that's a little bit of me on a pulpit making a speech, and I apologize for that, but something I feel strongly about.
That's all right. It's just like it says, we are all part of the family of humankind, and
you
we
bet.
Need to understand each other. And once again, the book is Moving Beyond Loss, Russell Friedman and John W. James, creators of the Grief Recovery Method. And the book is on sale now at Amazon.com and pretty much any bookstore you go to. It was released in December. And you can also go to the website at griefrecoverymethod.com. GriefRecoveryMethod.com and get more information about how to deal with moving beyond loss. Russell Friedman, thanks so much for being our guest today, Russell.
Thanks, Melvin. My pleasure. Anytime, friend.
We've got to do this again, too. And I know you'll be writing another book soon, so I'm not worried
about
it. All right, thanks. Has been Spotlight 92. We'll do it again next week. In the meantime, you're back for more of the best in jazz. This is U92 FM.